Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. As we reported yesterday, the executive committee was briefed by Bill Karp on the yellowtail flounder empirical approach for estimating the stock size of Georgia's Bank yellowtail flounder. And Paul's got a presentation for us, and we'll take your questions at following. Hey, folks in the back of the room, could you take your conversations outside, please?
Okay. Thank you, Terry. It's a pleasure to be here today. I want to thank the council for this opportunity to discuss this yellowtail empirical approach, and I hope that it provides a context for some innovative work that I think we'll be doing over the next several months here. This talk is only 12 slides long. There are no graphs, there are no equations, and sadly, there's no humor. It'll be one of the most difficult talks I've ever given. But I want to emphasize this is material to supplement, this presentation supplements the information provided in your packets there behind tab one, and then it's number three. And number 3A, I guess, is the letter from Dr. Karp to the council and to provides additional details on the approach. So I've taken pretty much a question and answer format for this presentation, describe what it is, what we're trying to do with this empirical approach, why we're doing it, a little bit of motivation. Tell you what we are doing, what the process will be, give you a little bit of background in terms of how we might end up crafting catch advice, indicate who will be involved, and a bit of a schedule on when we're doing it, and then describe the assessment process itself, and then discuss a little bit in terms of whether this new approach will in fact meet the requirements of the Magnuson-Stevens Act. So in the next slide, please. Oh, I guess I can do that too, huh? Okay. All right. So what is the empirical approach? And essentially, it's an attempt to derive catch advice based on a detailed review of the survey estimates and the assumptions used to derive swept area estimates of abundance. By that, I mean that we're going to take a very intensive look at all the underlying assumptions associated with the swept area estimates of abundance and bring into play a lot of the various pieces of research that are, in fact, oftentimes difficult to assemble and to consider in the context of typical assessments. We want to examine those changes over time and look at their implications for total mortality. I'll get into that aspect of this assessment process. Our approach in a bit, and really take into recognition the some explicit consideration of the implications of the missing mortality, and that will be I think an important component of this. And then finally, just to kind of reassure you that this isn't completely off the mark or way out, that a similar approach is already being used by this council for Gulf of Maine winter flounder. So why are we doing this? Well, first of all, the stock assessment for Georgia's Bank Yellowtail suffers from a severe retrospective pattern. There's a characteristic overestimation of the biomass, underestimation of F in any given year, and subsequent assessments reveal this problem, which results in catches being set too high, Fs being realized that are too high in retrospect, and then kind of a progressive downward effect on catch advice and certainly on believability in the assessment. This has been attributable to, and the reason that we're well aware of the retrospective pattern, it's not a problem of the models per se. It's more an indication of there are problems in the data themselves, and namely, these can arise. These are missing fish. The problem is on the order of, it could be inaccurate reporting of landings, underestimation of discards, or increases in natural mortality. That last term is a very broad brush statement about changes in natural mortality, and we'll be trying to work through those components there. But you know, presently, neither the model nor the ancillary evidence that's been assembled to date is sufficient to distinguish among these various alternatives. So there's no impugning anybody's credibility or in any of these statements. It's simply a fact that we don't know, and there's not sufficient information. So as a result, there have been a series of ad hoc adjustments to these assessment models that have, in fact, been problematic for the council. But we also know that in the absence of doing something like this, there's no expectation that revising or updating the model in and of itself is going to be sufficient to answer those questions. To continue, you know, why are we doing this? As I said, it's more likely to be a problem of the data rather than the model itself. And to that end, this past summer in July, the ICES working group on stock assessment methods, it was a worldwide conference, met in Boston. The yellowtail flounder assessment was, in fact, chosen as one of the species, the problem species, and it was kind of a model bake-off process in which multiple models were tried, examined thoroughly, and none were found to provide adequate answers other than the blanket statement that there was indications that this something underlying process, which could not be determined, had changed over time. All of the models had characteristic problems, and all of them sort of failed in the basic sort of ability to derive kind of a new standard model that could be applied to yellowtail flounder. At its core, there are really some conflicting signals in the data. There was a rapid rise in the mid-90s through the early 2000s following the closure on Georges Bank, like we saw in scallops and the rapid increase in the biomass. This also occurred in the closed areas on Georges Bank. It was not, however, long-lived as it has been, or sustainable as it has been for scallops. We observe, in general, a truncated age distribution of the population. Fish rarely in the 5-6-year-old range for a species that can live 10 to 12 years. And we're seeing declining weights at length. So this manifests itself in terms of at the fish processing house in terms of decreased yield per animal. So there clearly is something else going on. Catches have declined, but the survey indices have declined even faster. So there's just simply no understanding or complete understanding of what factors are involved in terms of these declining survey indices. And in part, this approach is designed to turn over every stone to look at each of these processes, each of these survey indices, in terms of the components of actual catchability. So in the next slide, we look at, so what are we doing? It's trying to decompose the modeling process into sort of the basic elements of catchability. So we're looking at our survey indices in in-depth process there, examining the use of day versus night tows, adjusting the total abundance estimates upward for that, comparing gear, looking at differences between the albatross and bigelow as one element of this. There are length-specific differences as well that have been incorporated into the assessment. We're incorporating a fair amount of work in terms of comparisons using cooperative research, the roller versus the cookie gear, some of the studies that were done in Rhode Island and the Mid-Atlantic, looking at those factors in terms of catchability. Also incorporating results of other cooperative research projects. Last August, there was a study conducted by industry on Georges Bank, and we'll be using those data as metrics of relative abundance. Those indices typically can't go into stock assessment models because they're not, unless they're used as measures of trend, and using indices as measures of trend usually requires several years' worth of data. So in this context, we're using them as abundance estimates, looking at their relative performance compared to other types of gear, and essentially ratcheting up the expectation. Expected value of the swept area estimates and comparing them using kind of a piecewise approach in terms of the various gear components. We'll also be looking at some new technologies, as you're aware from the discussions on scallops. The HapCam images provide a pretty valuable data source in terms of examination of possible alternative density estimates based on camera imagery. There are a number of tagging studies that have been proposed, both short and long-term projects, most of which were done at SMAST in terms of Peterson-type estimates for short-term tagging experiments, as well as longer-term estimates based on cooperative research projects. We want to take into account and fully explore the uncertainty of these estimates as well. So we'll be trying to, in each instance where we do invoke an increase in relative efficiency, we'll be looking at the variance of that approach and its variance for the density estimates. So that's all part of this process. So you might say, okay, Sherlock, what else? How are you going to develop catch advice out of this this process here? And that will be, that is a challenge. I don't have all the answers associated with that question. But we are trying to take into account or define what the best abundance estimates actually are. Now, best is going to be those sets of estimates or that estimate that is most consistent with the underlying hypothesis. So we'll be trying to take into account the relative catchabilities associated with the alternative gears that are used, try to figure out what's our best estimate of density over time. It's complicated. There are seasonal changes in the use of Georges Bank for yellowtail. The work that Ron Smolowitz has done highlights some of those changes over time, the seasonal changes, whether it's catchability, whether it's a seasonal migration on or off the bank. All of those factors will need to be taken into account. So the timing of a density estimate is important. It's not a trivial exercise to do that. When we compare differences between years, that will be an important component of all of this. For example, let's say hypothetically you find 20,000 metric tons in year one. Year two, you have 15,000 metric tons, and that both of those are your best estimates. And assume maybe 1,000 metric tons were taken out in that between those 2 years. That leaves 4,000 tons of unobserved removals that you have to explain. And so we'll be trying to incorporate that kind of information. It's sort of a mass balance approach. It is a kind of an elemental decomposition of the typical stock assessment model, but looking at it in terms of, okay, there are pieces that are missing. How do we best generate those or estimate those, and then what do you do with them? You know, typically that would result in an increase in natural mortality if you couldn't ascribe it to anything else. And then how will you manage, you know, what's the best way to handle those two pieces of information? Do you say those 4,000 tons are on the table and could be harvested? It's only because we neglected them and didn't take them. Or does it mean that, you know, something else major is going on and you may have to, in fact, consider those as part of the process of trying to craft management advice or craft a recommended catch limit. So it will be, we'll be trying to do this for as many years as possible. As you go back in time, the record starts to get a little more shaky in terms of trying to do this actual decomposition approach. But we will be using the information from the Bigelow and also comparing that with the Albatross. We'll be comparing the other sources, potential sources or measures of scale, relative scale from other cooperative research projects. Okay, who will be involved? We've worked out, I think, some of the details that in our early vetting of this process revealed, and this will be conducted as a track benchmark process. That is, will be it'll be a relatively formal process, as described by the track. There will be external scientists brought in for peer review. There'll be a full complement of U.S. and Canadian scientists at the table under this process. We will be bringing a broader range of people into the table here. It won't be simply stock assessment people, but it'll be gear specialists, people more intimately involved with the surveys and also with cooperative research, and also the involvement of fishermen, industry, the consultants, and managers will also be envisioned as part of this. We're on a very tight timetable for all of this in order to make this information available for the summertime activities of the council and determinations of the 2015 catches. We will, and also to make it available for the track in June. We're shooting for conducting this track benchmark the week of April 14th. It's looking more and more like that'll be a full week of activities. Put it on your calendar. It'll be probably starting in the afternoon on the 14th. We will be having one or more meetings with industry prior to this benchmark. The nature of this discussion is, or this action is sort of a little less formal than say a track or a SARC would typically be, the SAW SARC process, and by that I mean that we have to have some meetings internally to assemble the data and then probably have, unfortunately, short time notices for some of these meetings. So I guess apologies in advance. We simply don't have the knowledge of how us pulling all the pieces together is going to actually work on that. So, and then finally, it's important to recognize that not all of the 2013 data will be available when we do this benchmark in April. So we will be taking the 2013 data, updating it, and incorporating whatever recommendations are actually realized through the track benchmark. And those will be part of the track update, which occurs in June of the year. So that process is kind of two-step, and it really is just a consequence of the information flow. Okay. So this track benchmark, I've spent most of the I've given you a little bit of background on that, but the benchmark will make some recommendations on use and also particularly with respect to the existing VPA model. It's too soon to say exactly what the track benchmark will conclude, and we will follow whatever recommendations they come down with. It's likely that we will update the VPA as part of this process, but its relative use or importance with respect to this new benchmark is to be determined. And then the results of the track itself and the updated data through 2013 and also the 2014 U.S. and Canada survey data, which are will also be considered in June, will be reviewed by the SSC and also the TMGC, the Transboundary Management Guidance Council. So, and then the final, will this meet the requirements of the Magnuson-Stevens Act? I believe that we'll be able to make an overfishing determination on the basis of this if we assert that there's no difference in natural mortality, then our fishing mortality rate will be roughly proportional to the ratio of the harvest over the biomass estimates. If we update the natural mortality rate as a result of this process, then of course that will be have to factor in terms of defining a new or updating a fishing mortality rate. We won't be changing the basis of the fishing mortality rate over fishing definition. However, we will be updating the parameters of that process. So I it's a fine distinction, but I hope the council is aware of that distinction. The biomass reference points will not be are not likely to be revised as part of this process. The forecasting that would be necessary in order to establish an alternative, either stock recruitment relationship or a BMSY proxy, will not be, we won't be able to do that as part of this, for this process. So in terms of progress towards rebuilding, it will probably remain unknown. However, by virtue of the long-term process the long timetable for rebuilding for this stock, I think as long as we keep the fishing mortality in the vicinity or below FMSY, it's pretty clear that it will come into equilibrium with the new recruitment time series, whatever that might happen to be. So that concludes my presentation. If there are questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them. And I think it's a new approach. I think it offers a way of integrating dealing with what has been a series of intractable problems and questions, whether or not it can answer all those intractable questions and answers is still open to debate, but I think we're trying to assemble the team together to address it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Paul, for the presentation and to the whole team for putting this new approach together. I'm sure there'll be questions. Dave Preble had his hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Paul. This is a vexing problem and one that we really need to solve. Just a quick question. I'm wondering, we seem to be having an explosion both in numbers and in health of yellowtail flounder out on 3LNNO. Is there any linkage here that you see might exist between these two situations?
I'm not aware of the explosion on 3NLO, the Labrador, Newfoundland, Labrador stock. If the potential for temperature influence is certainly a consideration, the absence of fishing in those areas has also been fairly long-term at this point. I know that for many of those stocks, some of the off the Grand Bank has been an issue in terms of those assessments. So, but I can't comment directly on it whether it would be I hypothesize it would be a migration or something like that. Our fish have booked over there.
My concern is that they do appear to be increasing in ANAFO. That's within the ANAFO regulatory area, and on Grand Banks. And the TAC keeps has gone up. The Canadians now have a 17,200-ton quota, which they now take. We're fishing out there now. And the quality of the product has been absolutely supreme compared with what we're seeing health-wise in the fish on George's Bank. And this last year, the SCRS told us that we could go to 25,000 tons without even reaching 50% possibility of getting it wrong. So I just – it seems too coincidental to not have some sort of linkage. I just wondered if you had any ideas on it.
No, I don't. I mean, I think the poor condition of our fish and, you know, its relationship to potential disease is largely unknown. I have talked with Ron Smolowitz about the you know, maybe the progression of the disease, and you know, the incidence rates in and of themselves of ichthyophonus may not be informative in terms of its consequences for natural mortality if in fact, as Ron has suggested, that the observation of incidence is quickly followed by mortality, by death of the animals. So you may only be seeing a snapshot of those who are surviving momentarily as the disease progresses. So, but that's speculative at this point.
David Pierce.
Yeah, thanks to you and your colleagues at the Senate, Bill Karp, for moving forward on this. It's an important issue, obviously, and a lot of time is being devoted by the center to move this forward to help us out. So much appreciated for that. I've got a couple of questions. I noticed that in one of our documents for this meeting, attachment number 3, there are the draft terms of reference for the track benchmark assessment 2014, and it cites a conclusion that was drawn during the 2013 track, where it says the track acknowledges that the assumptions made about population dynamics in the model do not fully capture the trends in the data. So that leads me to ask the question. You said in your presentation that it appears that the it's about the data, not about the models, that the models appear to be all right, but something's not right with the data, wrong data, lack of data. I think that's what you said. But you also said, I believe, that at the IC's review, all the models had problems. So I'm trying to reconcile where this is going relative to the models and to the data, because if there's going to be from the get-go a conclusion that the models are okay, it's about the data, then I've got a problem with that, especially in light of the last track conclusion. So could you elaborate a bit?
Sure. Yeah, I think the statement about the models do not fully capture the trends in the data is reflecting both the trends in the survey indices, which are uniformly downward, and the catch itself, which is also downward. And in that regard, you know, the decrease in catch should have resulted in an attenuation or a reversal of the trends in the surveys. However, because there's some underlying trend that has changed, most likely natural mortality, in fact, the model data are in conflict with one another, and the model is unable to explain them without external information that they can bring to bear. So the models can only enlighten or inform you with respect to the parameters that are put into them. When something has changed and it's impossible to tell what it is, then we are left with the dilemma of trying to decipher whether or not it's a change in landings, a change in discarding, a change in natural mortality. And then the other component of this is that we will be doing this examination of the surveys in great detail to try to relate catch rates that we observe with various types of gear, various surveys, and also with respect to sort of the basic components or elements of catchability that we can deduce from some of the cooperative experiments.
Okay, thank you. You just emphasized natural mortality, and I'm glad you did, and you highlighted points made by Ron previously. I think it's going to be very important for this empirical approach to focus on natural mortality. And I think you're going to, right, in your presentation, there's a line, investigate effects of alternative assumptions regarding abundance estimations. So I assume that means you'll be looking at impacts of different values in natural mortality, which will be extremely important. And I hope that as part of this exercise, you can also, that you will, you and your colleagues will factor in the conclusions that were drawn at the last track on Eastern Georgia's Bank Cod. Loretta O'Brien reported to us a meeting ago, I think, maybe it was two meetings ago, that the natural mortality for Georgia's Bank Cod was assumed to be 0.80 instead of 0.20. So that's a real jump. And I believe she said that the Canadian scientists made the case that that natural mortality was caused by seals. So I have to wonder, I think we all have to wonder, seals are not just eating codfish out on Georgia's Bank. Very likely they're going for the easy prey, which is that which is on the bottom. So I hope that this ecosystem element, predator-prey element of Georgia's Bank effects on yellow-tailed seals notably will be factored into your discussions so we get a better idea as to what might the natural mortality be. That's going to be looked at in a major way, correct?
Right. We still may not have the smoking gun or the seal diet composition information to go forward on this, but we'll be doing some exploratory work in terms of what that might be.
Well, okay, but Loretta and the Canadian scientists and the U.S. scientists, part of the track process, did find the silver bullet. It was seals. At least that's what she stated. Now, maybe she'd reflect on that a bit more and change her mind. But the Canadian scientists, their opinions seem to hold out, and the U.S. scientists gave in to that argument. Otherwise, there's no basis for the 0.80 natural mortality. So I'm struggling with that, Georgia's Bank Cod. And now when we delve into Georgia's Bank Yellowtail, I really hope we can get the Canadian perspective factored into this as well to see if there can be more insights into what the seals are doing.
Right. Well, I think for the track benchmark, it was a bit of a split decision on the seal issue. There is a rather striking intervention that's used in the stock assessment model for cod that it reflects a change in the natural mortality from 0.2 to 0.8 on fish age 5 and older beginning in 1994 or something on that order. So it's an intervention very similar to the intervention we use in terms of splitting the series as well. So I think in the absence of consumption estimates and direct consumption estimates on of seals on the yellowtail flounder, we'll be in that same kind of dilemma as well. But we may not have to explain it in order to use the revised estimate of natural mortality. So whether or not we have the silver bullet smoking gun metaphor is still open, I think.
One final point. I noticed in your presentation towards the end, like when you referenced the track itself and what's going to happen, it's on page 5 of your presentation, that once the Canadian scientists get together with the U.S. scientists through the track process, there'll be an updating of the VPA. So I hope that all the work done that's going to be done as part of this process will actually enable some assessment conclusions and some management advice that will be far more than just advice that will be coming out of an updated VPA. If that's the fallback position that might be supported by the Canadians, that will be very unsettling and very, very disappointing.
Thanks. Yeah, we have worked very hard with the principals in the track in order to ensure that we have a process that ultimately leads to some robust conclusions that will be followed as part of the track update process. So I don't think there's a should be an overarching concern that this empirical approach is a complete dead end and that it will simply revert to the VPA. I think, in fact, it will at a minimum have a very strong influence on the interpretation of the VPA results.
Okay, I've got Terry, Mary Beth, Laura, and Tom Neese, and if these questions run past, and Mike Siswine, if these questions run much past 2 o'clock, we're going to move on to the performance review. We've got a really constrained time schedule this afternoon. So, Terry?
Yeah, I guess I'm following up on Dave's point. So if you compare the two models and you find that there's a reason to change the reference points at the track, do the terms of reference for the track say that, and so that we can change the reference points?
At the track benchmark, there will be some consideration of changing the reference points, and let's see if check the yeah. So I mean, it addresses that issue somewhat obliquely in terms of saying, if possible, describe how the catch advice could be provided based only on the data. So that is, in fact, taking into account this natural mortality rate. The reference points, as I described, if we have very strong evidence of a change in the natural mortality rate, we can update the reference point with respect to the magnitude of natural mortality, which, in fact, will change the value of the reference point, also the fraction of the resource that can be harvested. So, as I said, the likelihood or the ability to change the biomass reference point is much lower on the priority list as well as likelihood list. So, yeah, I think you're searching for another answer here.
I am. And the other answer is it's not in the terms of reference, as I'm looking at it on Mary Beth's computer here now. So if it doesn't get added, if you find evidence of it, can we add it at that point, or do we need to add it now? No.
You're referring to
Terry's right. The track terms of reference that have been circulated for the June track do not include a term of reference that say re-estimate the reference points. And without that term of reference, it would appear that the track would not re-estimate those reference points. So we need to get that added to the terms of reference for the June track if that's going to be the case.
Okay. The reference points, of course, within track are negotiated. I mean, they are. This is a reference point that is not necessarily equivalent to the reference points for U.S. Fisheries management process. So there is one that tends to get close to our FMSY proxy or below.
Tom.
Well, that's right. But the point is that we're using, in our management system, we're using F40% for Georges Bank yellowtail flounder to determine the overfishing level, which is separate from the F reference we use at the track in order to guide management advice for the TMGC. And I guess my point is there is nothing in the track terms of reference right now for the June track which tell them to re-estimate F40% or some other suitable FMSY proxy. So how is that going to get done at the track if that's not in the terms of reference?
I believe we could embed that within the track benchmark reference point. I mean, or terms of reference. If we have strong evidence of a major change in natural mortality, as deduced from this process, we would have to we would change it. We could change it at that point, so there would be a revised basis for both F40% and for F reference point, whatever's negotiated value. Both of those are influenced and are functions, in fact, of the natural mortality rate.
So is that an explicit term of reference for the benchmark to reestimate the FMSY proxy?
No, it is not right now. We could incorporate that as the revised terms of reference. There's quite a bit of process layers associated with all of this, but that seems to be one that would be perhaps a significant change or an important change to incorporate, so that it is now an explicit term of reference.
Terry, all set?
No.
Yep.
So how do we go about it as a council advising, or do we even advise on terms of references? I mean, right now, so I'm a member of the TMDC, and we're going to, even if you spend all this money doing this, we're not going to be able to use it unless we change the terms of reference now. Am I getting it right, Tom?
Well, with respect to the process question, technically the terms of reference for the track have to be approved, I think, by the steering committee. The TMGC usually makes a recommendation, and then the steering committee usually approves them. I don't believe that step has been followed yet on the track terms of reference for June. With respect to the benchmark assessment for yellowtail flounder, presumably some sort of process will be followed like is normal for our saw sarks, where the NRCC is given the opportunity to weigh in on the terms of reference, which I don't think that step has actually been followed yet. And when the NRCC weighs in on the terms of reference, we do comment and we do negotiate back and forth with the other NRCC members.
Beth.
Thank you. I think some of the questions I have already been discussed, but I think the most important thing is that if your Science Center and others are going to put all this effort into this process, we want to make sure that coming out the other end, that it is something that we can use. And we had seen terms of reference in the past that we were feeling uncertain that that would give us that. So if there's still a process that would allow us to have what we need, I think that would be really important. So I'm going to move on to something a little different. It may not be a question for Paul, but it was his next to the last slide about will this meet the requirements of the Magnuson Act. And there's some discussion here about the reference points, but the last bullet, progress toward rebuilding may be unknown. So if that's where we land, what are the implications of that from the regional office perspective? If we have a rebuilding plan in place and we don't have a way to track it, where does that leave us?
Sue?
Well, we did talk about that. Because Georges Bank Yellowtail's rebuilding timeline is 2026, it's a long way off, and we believe by that time, we would have a good likelihood of rebuilding. So I think as we get closer, we clearly need to answer that question. We'll need to be able to answer that question. But right now, it's, you know, in our discussions anyways, it seemed like we could go forward with the way we have this, not knowing definitively, but because of so far off that we would we'd be comfortable going forward with this. And I don't know, Gene, if you want to weigh in, but that's where we ended up on that.
Gene?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a valid question, and it's one that, you know, when we first saw this internally, we discussed, and I think we're going to have to look at it further to see if there is a way. You know, we do have other fisheries where you have proxy sort of rebuilding proxies based on what's in, you know, the assessment toes and so forth. So I think it's something that if this goes forward, we will have to look at and try to either quantify or at least qualitatively figure out a way that we can at least on a year-by-year basis check the progress of the measures in place. and it might be kind of a bootstrap thing year to year. But I do think we have to at least fulfill the requirement to be able to somehow through a proxy or some other way that I'm not that familiar with scientifically to track the rebuilding aspect of this.
And just one other question. I guess this one is for Paul. On the same slide, biomass reference points not likely to be revised. And the only place you can really revise them would be in a benchmark. So could you just maybe elaborate on why in this benchmark they would not be considered?
Typically, the biomass reference points are a function of an analytical model, whether that is derived from a stock recruitment relationship whereby we try to find out what biomass level produces maximum sustainable yield, or by some proxy measure such as a percent of maximum spawning stock biomass. In both cases, we will not have the sufficient information to really elucidate that particular factor. First one is that we won't have a time series, or at least not easily derived time series of recruitment, which is oftentimes the product of an analytical model. So we need that for a stock recruitment relationship, or we need the time series of recruitment in order to forecast the future state of the population and when it comes into equilibrium with contemporaneous or the best set of recruitment indices. So this benchmark is unconventional in that sense. We're looking primarily at the abundance estimation, the mass balance between different years, and its implications for trying to solve the problem that plagues all of the models, which is the missing fish, so to speak. So it's too broad of a scope to try to address not only this whole process of the individual components of the swept area biomass and all the other components that I mentioned, and try to get the next step, which is the consequence of an analytical model. That would be a subsequent benchmark, in my opinion.
Laura.
Hi, Paul. Thank you for the presentation. I just had a question. I have two questions. The first is where are the missing fish, and you attribute it, or you don't attribute it, but it has been attributed to inaccurate landings. And I just was wondering how that's determined and what magnitude of misreporting would need to go on to sort of correct the retrospective pattern. So, you know, what's the Science Center belief in terms of how many fish are not being accounted for through proper reporting?
Thank you. There's no a priori notion of the magnitude of the either misreported landings or underestimated discards. What has been done in the past, what has been presented to the track and to this council, is an exploration of the magnitude that would be necessary to offset those losses. And in each instance, to the best of my recollection and knowledge, the magnitude of the offset is implausible. That attributing it to any one of those factors in and of itself is insufficient to account for the missing fish, particularly landings, because of the magnitude that would be necessary to offset that. So it's just from a red face test, it doesn't seem to hold as a proximal or cause of the thing. It's simply a statement that that there are multiple potential sources of this. We will be focusing primarily on the differences that we see between estimates between two separate years, and then trying to say, okay, we may or may not be able to ascribe them to an underlying cause. We will be able to explore what it would take in order to do that, and then usually you can look at it in terms of simple plausibility that, you know, recording only 20% of the landings is completely impossible under the current system of monitoring that's in place.
Just one other follow-up question. Thank you. I would say that along with my colleague from Massachusetts, Dr. Pierce, we might find some of those landings in the bellies of the seals. But I would just wondering, when you're taking into account with this new assessment, the or new empirical approach, the catch, if you will be, if the models in the way that you're looking at the catch information will take into account the variety of factors that are artificially suppressing catch from where it might be otherwise, such as very low ACLs causing it to be a choke stock, so fishermen are avoiding catching it, such as gear modifications that are leading to a lower catch, such as yellowtail bycatch avoidance programs, so that there are man-made things at play that are artificially reducing catch. So is that going to be factored in as you look at where landings are?
Well, I think primarily our objective is to get the most accurate body count, if you will. We want to simply account for the fish in the most accurate manner possible. The factors that lead to those lower catches are sort of a secondary consideration and don't influence the way in which the data are processed. They're clearly relevant and in fact evidence of effective measures that the council has taken, but they're in terms of ascribing those actions as causes for the lack of model fit and so forth is not a primary focus of this research effort.
Right, but I guess I'd say as you count the fish, there may be more fish out there than you are seeing if you aren't taking into account the fact that your landings aren't where they might be otherwise. So not looking for credit for council actions, just looking for a way to factor in that there may be more good news than we're attributing because we're artificially catching less than are actually out there. Okay.
Your mic?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Now you can hear me. If that were the case, we should be seeing some evidence of that in the surveys, however they're derived, whether they're a Canadian survey, a U.S. survey, a cooperative research survey. We should be seeing that the effect of those suppressed or depressed landings should show up, and that's what we're looking for in this analysis. If we don't see them, then you go on to the next question is, okay, Are these bellies of seals, or are these ichthyofaunas, or are they some other source of natural mortality that we presently don't know about? Thank you.
Mike?
Yeah, first a quick comment. Paul, you mentioned the various models that were applied during the ICES workshop back in July to Georges Bank Yellowtail, and that it was a frustrating process because it didn't come up with some silver bullet to solve the problem. And that's certainly true. It is striking at what a range of possible catch advice could come out just as a result of choice between not necessarily equally, but various plausible models. I did want to comment, though, that I wouldn't just end the sort of experiment there, because while none of those models were completely satisfactory, many of them performed differently with respect to certain characteristics like retrospective patterns and so forth. And so further analysis might reveal some useful clues out of that exercise. Your presentation, you mentioned that biomass reference points not likely to be revised, and you gave the reasons, and I understand those reasons. But I wanted to make clear that shouldn't mean we just carry on and use old biomass reference points and compare them to the results of a new model that's inconsistent with that. I assume the interpretation should be we simply aren't going to have biomass reference points. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, we have instances where we've had biomass abundance measures. We've had a rejected assessment, biomass estimates, which exceeded the current reference points, yet we continued on a rebuilding program. And that assessment is being, this is butterfish I'm referring to, that assessment is currently being done as we speak in Woods Hole right now. So, but the idea that the biomass reference points should be limiting in this thing, I think, is not the case. I don't think that should be a limiting factor in terms of proceeding forward.
They're much more of an issue with respect to the domestic issues or this council than they are necessarily to the Canadians in the track process, since they're F-focused. But going on, and you also state that F reference points may be updated if analysis suggests a change in M. That implies a fairly obvious updating, and that is if we're still tying them to spawning biomass per recruit and M changes. It's a fairly trivial updating. My concern on that is that when this came up at the SSC, I think specifically for George's Bank Cod, that was actually my reaction initially as an SSC member. This implied a fairly obvious updating of the reference points, but Chris Legall put forward some very legitimate arguments. There wasn't a consensus, but legitimate arguments indicating why the exact opposite might occur, that is, an increase in M may result in a lower reference point, not a higher. And so I think that this statement here is not going to be as straightforward to come to resolution as you might think. And so I just caution about that.
I don't think anything will be straightforward in this side. So thanks.
Tom.
I guess the one thing that I'm a little bit concerned about is to make sure that we're clear on what's coming out of the benchmark, what's coming out of the track, and how we're going to use the information no matter how the scenario turns out. And this troubles me because it doesn't seem like we are necessarily all on the same page. If I look at the letter that I got from Bill on one of the attachments, it says, depending upon the outcome of the benchmark, results will either be considered alone as a basis for catch advice or considered along with the current VPA modeling results and relevant VPA sensitivity runs as having been conducted in the past. That's on page 5 of one of the attachments. When I look at the terms of reference that have been circulated for the track, which admittedly are not quite yet final, the language does not say that this empirical approach can be used standalone. It says that the empirical approach will be used to inform the catch advice coming out of the VPA. Now, that, to me, is a not-so-subtle difference. That implies that there's no chance that we're going to be using just the empirical catch advice, whereas the letter from the center implies that there is a chance we may just use the empirical catch advice. And the reason why I think it's important that we get those clear is because it's not clear to me how the agency is going to react if we have a VPA and empirical catch advice, and both are being considered by the track, and both give different answers. Now, admittedly, maybe it's unlikely they'll give different answers, but we've been surprised before by things we thought were unlikely. And if you've got a VPA that says you need a catch of 100 tons to end overfishing, and you've got empirical catch advice that says a catch of 500 tons ends overfishing, how does the agency decide which one is meeting the Magnuson requirement? I don't see how our terms of reference have addressed that possibility.
Yeah. Well, I guess in a partial answer, perhaps not a satisfactory one, is that the terms of reference for the track were developed prior to the formulation of the benchmark. We were not, based on some comments that we received from the council and others suggesting, okay, we have this is going to be an assessment light process, and we won't be able to fully vet this alternative in the track process. We discussed with the Canadians and came up with an alternative, which is a relatively short notice benchmark that would give the analysis that we're will conduct as part of this, a much greater weight and a much greater influence on the outcome of the track in June. So we've tried to tighten that link between the two and reduce some of the uncertainty implicit in the track term of reference, which you're referring to, which is consider in conjunction with and so forth. So I'm not sure what term of reference, whether it's for the track benchmark or for the track assessment in June, is most appropriate to change at this point. But I'm not the chair of the track, and would be will convey that information forward.
Okay, well, thank you, Paul. We've unfortunately exhausted the time that we can allocate to this discussion this afternoon, so I ask anyone who has further questions for Paul or Bill to sidebar with them out in the hall. We're going to move right into the performance review for the Northeast Fishery. Tammy, when you're set up, we'll start right off. I do note you have 84 slides. Okay. We've got about an hour because we will be taking, at the end of your presentation, we'll be in questions. We'll be taking a short break and starting groundfish promptly at 3:30. Pretty.